Welcome in. It's the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast. I am your host, Jordan Glass. Thanks so much for tuning in. Got a lot to talk about on today's show, and we'll start off in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs as Boston takes care of Florida on the road in Florida by a final score of 5-1 in game one of that series. That's a big feat to go into Florida and beat them that commandingly, that heavily, 5-1. That's something you definitely got to be impressed with if you're Boston. You got to feel good about moving forward in this series. And look, everything heading into this series was everybody's talking about Sergei Bobrovsky, and obviously rightfully so, the way Bob just kind of took over that series and really commanded that series against the Tampa Bay Lightning in round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, he's shut down a pretty good Tampa Bay Lightning team and really kind of held them to within, like, I think the most they scored. I think they scored 5 goals once in that series. Everything else was kind of very limited for them. And he's the talk of the town heading into this series. And then all of a sudden, Jeremy Swanson comes in and says, no, I'm involved in this second round series as well. It was very crucial for the Bruins last night, and definitely stepped up on the road for them. Like I said, it's tough to beat Florida. It's tough to beat Florida in Florida, and Boston off to a great start in that series in round two, getting that complete team win. I mean, on the defensive side of the ice, the offensive side of the ice, both zones working really well for them last night. And then obviously I've already mentioned Jeremy Swanson, the job he did holding this Panthers team to just one goal. So if you're a Bruins fan, you got to be happy. You got to be excited about the way this second round series has started against a very tough Florida Panther team. I will say, don't boast and puff out your chests too much, because like I said, this is a very good Florida Panther team that you are playing. They are going to get theirs. You got yours in game one. They're still going to find a way to get theirs. I expect this is going to be a series that's going to go 6, maybe even 7 games. So definitely nowhere close to being over just yet. Like I said, just having game one. Another series, but pivoting away from the NHL playoffs to the NBA playoffs, the Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards, Carl Anthony Towns. You might as well look with the way they're playing. You might as well just compare their name or combine their names together and keep them both in just one full little swoop right there. So we'll call them Anthony Towns Edwards. So we'll call them that and just, you know, get all their names together, because they are on fire right now for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they have a 2-0 lead over the defending champion Denver Nuggets because of that. 106-80. A 26-point win last night. Just dominant performance once again from those two big players for the Timberwolves. It's big that Minnesota's up 2-0. Because you look at the Nuggets, and the Nuggets, they're a good team, right? I mean, obviously, to be the reigning NBA champions, you have to be a good team. You have to have talent, and they do. But falling down in an 0-2 hole early on, I don't know if the Nuggets can come back from this. I know they got Joker. I know they've got the talent. But, man, you're talking about an NBA series. You've got to win 4 out of the last 5. Which means you've got to find a way to go on the road in the postseason and win. And that's not easy to do in the NBA. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see where this series plays out. Minnesota just 2 wins away from playing for the Western Conference Final and an opportunity to represent the West in the NBA Finals. So it's definitely going to be fun to watch. I think, look, along the lines of what I said with the Florida Panthers, they're going to get theirs. I think eventually the Nuggets will wake up and they will find a way to win 1 or 2 games, make it a little bit interesting. But it is, like I said, it's going to be very tough to erase this 2-0 deficit that they have right now in this series. And they've got bigger issues because they may have to go the rest of the series without Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray, a boneheaded decision last night, throws a heating pad on the court. Carl Anthony Towns hits a shot for the Timberwolves, and he gets frustrated and throws a heating pad on the court. It's just boneheaded things like that. You can't have that type of stuff in the postseason, because now the conversation is, should they postpone, should they suspend Jamal Murray for throwing that heating pad on the court. Technically, that should have been a technical penalty last night, but the official said after the game, he was asked about it, the official said, I didn't see it until it was too late. Couldn't really go back and make the call then. So, obviously, if you're wondering why there was no technical call or why he wasn't ejected from the game or anything like that, first and foremost, I think an ejection might have been a little egregious in that situation, but there at least wasn't a technical called because they didn't see it until it was too late. I think it had kind of been brought off the court, or they saw it when they were bringing it off the court, so they weren't quite sure how it ended up on the court. When they found out later, they're like, well, you know, we can't call the technical now, right? It's already passed. You know, statute of limitations, if you will, has already come and gone. We can't call it now, so we've just got to let it go. So now it falls to the NBA, and what are they going to do? As a league, are they going to look at this and go, okay, this is something where we're going to do like the officials did and let it go? Or are we actually going to come down with some type of punishment on the Jamal Murray and keep him out of a game or two in the postseason with his team already down two games in a series? That could be very beneficial for Minnesota and very hurtful if you are the Denver Nuggets. So, the boneheaded plays, the playoffs are the worst time to have them. And you got to control your emotions better than that. If you're going to compete for a championship, if you're going to win a championship, you've got to compose yourself and control yourself a lot better than what we saw last night from Jamal Murray throwing that heating pad onto the court. Also in the NBA, Knicks and Pacers got started. Great game in this one. 121-117 is the final between these two teams. New York takes game one of that. Jalen Brunson, big for the Knicks, 43 points in that game. The Pacers bench was kind of their advantage heading into this series. They did a good job last night in that game. So they played decent, but they're definitely going to need to step it up and play at another level, because this, I think right now we are on a collision course to where it's going to be the New York Knicks and the Boston Celtics playing for the Eastern Conference Finals and a spot in the NBA Finals. And I think the Pacers, out of the two teams that those guys are playing, between the Pacers and the Cavaliers, I think the Pacers have the better opportunity at pulling off the upset. Not to knock Cleveland. I think Cleveland is a good basketball team, but they have to go up against Boston, and that is a whole nother level, right? Cleveland just went 7 with Orlando, right? They're a little gassed, right? They probably are kind of trying to coast on reserves till they can get a day or two of travel and kind of get some more rest in their system before continuing this series against Boston. So I think they're going to be a little gassed, and I think that's going to play into the favor of the Boston Celtics, because Boston wrapped up their series while Cleveland was still battling it out with Orlando in all 7 games of their series. The Pacers, the Knicks, they both wrapped up their series. They got a chance to rest. So I expect this series to be the better of the two Eastern Conference semifinals. I think this is going to be a close one. I think, honestly and truthfully, I mean, you look at it, I think a big reason why New York won that game, Jalen Brunson, like I said, 43 points, stepped up, played big for them in that game last night, and Knicks have a 1-0 lead because of it. The Pacers, they've got to bounce back, and I think they can. I think the Pacers can bounce back and win game two and make it definitely a very interesting series moving forward. So we'll keep an eye on that moving forward. I'm excited. I think this Knicks-Pacers series, not only does it have that old-school NBA feel to it with these two teams facing off in the postseason, but it is I think it's going to be a pretty good one. Might be one of the best of the semifinals that we have. So we'll move on away from the NBA postseason now to some college football, because a couple of great stories in college football. Deion Sanders. Last week we talked about Deion Sanders and the whole situation with Xavier Smith. Xavier Smith, if you're not familiar with the situation, Xavier Smith has entered the transfer portal. He was a defensive back at Colorado, where Deion Sanders is the head coach. Xavier Smith not only enters the transfer portal, but he goes and does an interview with The Athletic. And in the interview, he basically attacks and goes after Deion Sanders and says, guy didn't bother to get to know me. He didn't care. He was belittling me. He was belittling other players, making us lose confidence and belief in ourselves as players and as human beings, blah, blah, blah. And basically just trashing Deion Sanders as a head coach. Well, that led to The Athletic posting the article on social media, as you do nowadays. I mean, when I finish this podcast, it's going to get posted to the ESPN Pensacola social media pages and the Jordan Glass social media pages, because that's just what you do. It's how you promote things in this industry. So they promoted out on X, also formerly known as Twitter. I still call it Twitter. So if you hear me say Twitter, I'm referring to X. They posted out there, Shedeur Sanders, the son of Deion Sanders, who is also the starting quarterback at Colorado, comes out and says, yeah, I don't know who that is. He must have been mid. Must not have been that great of a player. Don't remember him. That sparked some fiery back and forth tweets from some people that were supporting Xavier Smith, including a family member who basically called out Shedeur and was like, yeah, I'm glad my son doesn't act like this on social media. And to which Deion Sanders responded with pretty much saying, well, my son's going to be a top five pick in the NFL draft. Where's your son going to be? And then proceeded to LOL a couple of times and say he's got time. Well, now after a week of reflection, Deion Sanders has come out in a interview and is talked about that a little bit. And I, you know what? I respect Deion Sanders for what he said. He said, you know what? I was bored, but I got to do better. And he admitted it. He said, I got to do better. I'm the head coach of a Division I college football program. I was bored. I got to do better. First and foremost, as the head coach of a Division I football program, you should never be bored, right? There's always a recruit that you can talk to. There's always some film that you can watch. I very rarely doubt that Kirby Smart is ever bored at the University of Georgia. I very seriously doubt that Mike Norvell is bored over in Tallahassee, right? Like, if you're bored as a head coach at a Division I college football program, I'm not trying to call out Coach Prime here, but I'm just saying, you got enough stuff going on that you probably really shouldn't be that bored to where you're starting a social media argument over a post done by The Athletic because they interviewed one of your former players. But I will give him credit, the fact that he stepped up and said, I need to do a better job of being better and not getting involved with stuff like that. So kudos to Deion Sanders. But again, like I said last week, if you're a college football player and you want to go play for Deion Sanders, you got to understand he calls himself Coach Prime because he coaches like he played back in the day, right? Unapologetically. He is unapologetically himself. He is going to call it like it is. And if you're playing like trash, you better believe he's going to line up your mom, your dad, your aunt, your uncle, your sister, your cousin, your girlfriend. Have them stand in front of you while he tells you you're playing like trash. Because that's just how he is. That's who he is as a person. So if you're going to go play for him, make sure that you understand that before you sign on the dotted line. I don't think Xavier Smith fully understood that. Before he signed on the dotted line, he got his feelings hurt. He thought it was all going to be sunshine and rainbows and fun times out there in Colorado. And turns out, Coach Prime actually coaches his team pretty darn hard. And he's pretty outspoken about what he needs to have done on his team. Let's not forget the example I always use. First team meeting with Colorado after taking the job. Tells half the team, you're probably going to need to enter the transfer portal because you're not good enough to play here anymore. I'm bringing luggage, and it's Louie. Understand what you're getting when you sign on the dotted line to play for Coach Prime. And again, I just don't think Xavier Smith did that. So hopefully he can find a place that he's happy at and he can transfer to and get some playing time at and be healthy too, because that was a big issue with him at Colorado was he was never fully healthy. So that definitely plagued his time there. Some other news in college football. I love this. Snoop Dogg, now the lead sponsor of the Arizona Bowl. So it used to be the Barstool Media Arizona Bowl or whatever the exact official title of it was. But basically, the previous sponsor was Barstool Sports. So they used to be the sponsor. Now it is going to be Snoop Dogg. But it's not just Snoop Dogg. It's Snoop Dogg and his brand of alcoholic drinks he has with his partner Dr. Dre. You may have heard of him. Yeah. It's called Gin and their drink brand is called Gin and Juice. And the bowl's name will be Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl presented by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop. This is going to be awesome, right? I mean, we've got the Pop-Tart Bowl, which is off the hinges out there in Orlando with the Pop-Tart mascot and everything going on with that and them popping him in a toaster, and then the winning team gets to eat the Pop-Tart mascot at the end. And then you've got the Duke's Mayo Bowl with the crazy mascot and the dumping the mayo on everybody. And now you're going to have the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. This is going to be a fun bowl game to be a part of. And speaking of being a part of it, you may be wondering what conferences will be a part of it. That'll be the Mountain West and the MAC. So a little MAC-tion in the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. I'm excited for that. Definitely looking forward to seeing that. I believe it's going to be on December 15th might have been the date for the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. So definitely we'll have to tune into that. Regardless of who's playing in it, it is going to be a fun game. Obviously, Snoop Dogg going to be a part of the broadcast. There's a couple of stipulations. Snoop Dogg going to come in and come into the booth and talk about the game a little bit while it's going on. He's also going to have some type of musical influence on the game too. So maybe a little Snoop Dogg concert at halftime. Hey, I'm there for it. I'll buy tickets to go to the bowl game just for that, right? I mean, because it's, let's be honest, it's a bowl game between teams in the Mountain West and the MAC. It ain't tickets to the Sugar Bowl, right? So you could probably afford some tickets to that a little easier than you could the Sugar Bowl or the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. So fly out to Arizona, fly out to Tucson, enjoy that dry desert climate out there. Get a little reprieve from your allergies here in the state of Florida and go and enjoy the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. And maybe even get a Snoop Dogg concert, or maybe get Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, and Eminem all at halftime like we saw in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago when it was in L.A. I'm there for it. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I think it's the first, by the way, the first bowl game that is sponsored by an alcoholic beverage, which honestly and truthfully had like shocked me at first. Like when I first heard that, I was like, wait, really? We haven't had like a bowl game before? But no, going back and looking at it, we have not. This is the very first bowl game that is sponsored by an alcoholic beverage company. So, I mean, you know, this is probably just the start. Get ready for the moving forward. Get ready for the Jose Cuervo Bowl or something along those lines. Hey, I'm for it. I'm for it. I don't think there should be a stipulation on it. I think obviously there should be some regarding the name or the company that the bowl game is sponsored by, because you're going to have families watching, you're going to have kids watching. You don't want it to be the Citrus Bowl brought to you by Blue Chew, right? You don't want that. That is not what you want. But I think, you know what, in a sports world, having it sponsored by a mixed drink that's in a can like the Gin and Juice company, or having a Coors Light Bowl or having the Tampa Bay Bowl brought to you by Coors Light or whatever, I think that's perfectly fine. I think it's great for the game moving forward. You do have to kind of be a little conscious of the organizations and the ownerships or the companies that you allow to be a part of these bowl games, because like I said, you don't want to have, instead of the Duke's Mayo Bowl, you don't want to have the Viagra Bowl. That's nobody wants that. All right. So you got to keep an eye out and be a little bit more cautious with that. But I like it. And it's not the first time we've seen a celebrity get involved with a bowl game. Jimmy Kimmel had, was it the Jimmy Kimmel or is it Jimmy Kimmel Show L.A. Bowl? I think it was the Jimmy Kimmel L.A. Bowl, right, where he had his own bowl game out in L.A., played in SoFi Stadium. So, this could be something we see moving forward where celebrities get a little bit more involved that, you know, are big sports fans. And if there is going to be a celebrity that gets involved with a college football bowl game, Snoop Dogg is the perfect one to do it. Because honestly and truthfully, when you look at the game of football, Snoop Dogg has been a fantastic ambassador for the game of football, for what he has done in the Southern California area and even other areas as well. What he's done with his youth football leagues is incredible. Like, if you've not watched any kind of documentary, there's several different videos and interviews he's done on this. And then there's also so many different articles about what he's done. Go check it out. The guy is legit when it comes to football. This is not just a gimmick thing for him to do to help promote his company. Yes, it does do that, but this guy really loves the game of football. He almost played the game of football, and I really do think that this is going to be an awesome bowl game to watch moving forward, because if anybody's going to do it right, I think Snoop Dogg's definitely going to do it right, as we now have officially, again, the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. NFL fans, if you are still kind of keeping an eye out for the schedule, looks like could be within the next couple of weeks. We know that the NFL has come out and said, oh, no, it's gonna be the month of May. When asked when the schedule would come out, they said, it's going to be May. I hate that I just did that, but I had to. It popped in my head, and I was like, yeah, why not? Go ahead and do it. But seriously, the schedule could pop out. It could be the end of this week, could be beginning of next week, could be the very end of the month. All we know is it's going to be in May, so hopefully we can get that NFL schedule soon. And for season ticket holders, whether you're a Saints season ticket holder or Falcons or whoever it may be, hopefully you can start planning out some of those trips to those games for you. As a matter of fact, NBC Sports, they've come out with a kind of a unique idea that the NFL, and they believe the NFL could actually legitimately do this, and that is actually spread the schedule reveals out over the course of a few days, kind of like they do with the draft. So have it kind of start on like a Thursday and then run through the weekend all the way through Sunday. I mean, I like the idea of releasing them all at once, but in the standpoint of covering the NFL schedule release, having them come out portions at a time definitely allows you a little bit more time to kind of look into the meat and potatoes of the schedule and kind of get really into it. But yeah, I mean, look, however they do it, I just say go ahead and give it to us already, right? We want to know what the schedules are going to be. We want to know what games we're going to have, what Monday Night Football games we can expect to have, because some people want to throw Monday Night Football watch parties, right? And the last thing you want to do is throw Monday Night Football watch party and the game be an absolute dud and stinker. Right? You want it to be a great game. That way the guests hang out and they stick around for the entire game and you have a great party there at your house while watching it. So I release the schedule, NFL. Release it now, Roger. Do it. Now, no. Let's move on back to some college football, because this is something that I actually had planned out to talk about last week, but never had a chance to get to, ran out of time on the show. So I want to bring it up today because we got a little bit of time left in today's show. New things coming to the world of college football. And there's a couple of them that really I want to touch on. First and foremost, the two-minute warning will actually be happening for college football this year. So when you're watching a college football game, so, you know, week one, when you're watching some of the great, you know, Power 5 on Power 5 matchups we have, whether it's Georgia-Clemson, whether it's Florida-Miami, whether it's any of the other great games we have opening up that weekend, you are going to see 2 minutes left in the second quarter, 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Much like the NFL, there will be a two-minute warning timeout that will stop the clock, and they'll take the timeout on the field. They'll go to a commercial break on the broadcast, and they will come back. So essentially, just like they do in the NFL, will be how the two-minute warning is done at the level of college football. And I hate it. I do. I hate it. I think it ruins the opportunity to have some of those great finishes that college football is known for. Right? I mean, call me crazy. When a team is down three and there is a minute and a half left in the game and they don't have any timeouts, and they've got to drive down the field in that time, they've got to work the clock, get out of bounds, all of that stuff, I love it. It's great for the game. It is entertaining. It keeps the fans on the edge of their seat, focused and tuned into the game. And I think what happens is now with the two-minute warning, you're going to have coaches that maybe are going to play it a little bit more safe, because they know they have that extra timeout in their back pocket. Essentially, now each team is going to have four timeouts in the half. So first half, you'll have your three timeouts, then you'll have the two-minute warning. And the second half, you'll have your three timeouts and the two-minute warning. So I think you're going to start seeing a lot more coaches play it safe and kind of just back off of maybe putting as much pressure onto the offense as they used to. And I think it's, look, it's not going to hurt the game. There's not going to be people going, well, I'm not watching college football because they have a 2-minute warning. No, but it is going to, a lot of those great finishes that we have that are nail-biting finishes where, like I said, a team has no timeouts or maybe just one timeout left. Because think about it. You're down 4. You've got to score a touchdown to win. Field goal doesn't tie it. You've got to score the touchdown in order to win. You get the ball back. There is 2 minutes and 15 seconds left. You have one timeout. So that means you have one timeout to last you that 2 minutes and 15 seconds. Well, now with the 2-minute warning, you've got two timeouts because you've got the one you can call. Then you've got the 2-minute warning. So it allows you to be a little bit more conservative with the play calling and kind of wait and play back and then see what happens. So I think it could be something that affects some of the close back and forth outcomes that we've seen the last few years. But again, I don't really think it's going to be a drastic change on the game. I'm just not a fan. I liked that there were differences between the college game and the NFL game. Case in point, overtime. I think the overtime rules in college football are far superior than the overtime rules in the NFL. So that was kind of my mindset with this, was that I really thought college was better without the 2-minute warning. Now we've got the 2-minute warning. You know, I understand they're trying to make college a little bit more like the NFL, so these players are a little bit more NFL ready. But I don't know. There's a couple of things I think the game could do without being similar in, and the 2-minute warning is one of them. One thing I actually do like, though, is the fact that this year college football will go to in-helmet communication. So if you're watching an NFL game the past few seasons and you've seen the player on the offensive side of the ball, or you've seen the player on the defensive side of the ball have that green circle sticker on the back of their helmet, that's the player with the communication system inside their helmet. That's how the officials know who has it and who doesn't have it. And only one player on each side of the ball. So presumably it's always the quarterback on the offensive side of the ball, right? Because he's getting the play calls. He's getting everybody lined up and adjusted, ready to go. And usually on the defensive side of the ball, it's usually an inside linebacker, maybe a safety, but usually it's an inside linebacker because of that location where they're essentially on the same spot of the field that the quarterback is, as far as being in the same distance of proximity to everybody else around him. So usually it's an inside linebacker. Sometimes you might see a safety or even a DB have that sticker on their helmet. But yeah, only one player on each side of the ball can have it. And it's going to operate the exact same way, again, in college that it does in the NFL. So you're going to see, more than likely, when you watch your college team play this fall, you're going to see a green sticker on the back of the quarterback's helmet and then on the back of one of the defensive players' helmets as well. And they'll be communicating with the coaches either on the sideline or up in the booth, and they'll be able to kind of go back and forth and talk about not only things on the field, but, you know, not really talk. I say they'd be able to talk. They can't really talk. It's really just a one-way conversation, more so from the coach to the player than the player back to the coach. But it can help with offenses. I mean, several different coaches have come out and talked about this, and one of them being Matt Rhule, the Nebraska head coach. And he said, I think it's great that on the offensive side of the ball, we're going to have this in place, because on the offensive side of the ball, it can actually open up teams to go back to the huddles. You know, a little old school football in there. Kids, a huddle, what that was, because, I mean, let's face it, not a lot of teams run huddles anymore, right? It's usually signal it in on the play. And that's another thing, is that with a hand signal, if a hand signal is a little off or something like that, then you've got a great opportunity of the coach being able to just flat out tell the quarterback what the play is. Or if the play clock's getting a little low, you've got an opportunity as the head coach to say, hey, play clock's getting low. Let's speed this up. Let's get the snap off. Get the snap off. Call a timeout. Call a timeout. Call a timeout. So it's definitely going to be beneficial for offenses. Defenses, on the other hand, could cause a little bit of an issue, because offenses have that opportunity, right? Offenses can kind of go at the pace they need to go. defensively, you're at the will of the opposing offense as far as pace and timing goes. Because when they snap that ball is when the play starts. You can't go, oh, hold on, hang on. We gotta go talk over here to these guys, and I've gotta convey a message to them real quick. Then you can snap the ball. You know, you don't get to do that. When the offense is ready and they snap the football, the play starts. You better be in position and ready to go too. And I think that's one of the issues on the defensive side of this. At least at first, I think eventually the teams will kind of get into a groove and figure out how to be able to do it defensively so that they can get the message in and relay the message to the rest of the defense before the ball is snapped. But yeah, I think to start off, there's definitely going to be some issues there with people kind of not getting the call in on time to the rest of the team. And then also at the same time, there is a little bit more of a distance between players. I mean, you look at it, the quarterback is the furthest player back most plays now, because, I mean, you look at it, most teams now run either in the pistol or the shotgun. Very rarely are teams still under center. So the quarterback is one of the deepest players back. So when he needs to adjust something, he's got everybody either next to him or in front of him. Or if they are in the pistol, maybe there's a running back a step behind him. But still, that's easy. You just turn and look behind you and tell him whatever you need to tell him. Defensively, you could be an inside linebacker defensively, but all of a sudden, because you've got a matchup on a tight end that's in the slot, you now have gone from the inside all the way to the slot on one side of the field. And what happens if you've got to relay a message about a play to the corner who is all the way back on the other side? You can't leave your man, because what happens if you walk off and leave your man? Said hut, play starts, your guy just goes down the seam, boom, big play. So there are going to be some situations here where the defensive side of the ball and defensive staffs, they're really going to have to work out how to communicate, not necessarily between the coach and the player. That's going to be easy. Obviously, you're just going to say it into the microphone. It goes through the headset. They get it. But then how do you convey that message to the rest of the defense? Got to be hand signals. Got to yell. Obviously, you got to do those things. But what is going to be the easiest and quickest way for them to get that message out and get that message out to a side of the ball that's pretty spread out, really, if you think about it? Because you've got your safeties lined up back where they are. You've got your corners out to the side. You've got your inside linebackers and your outside linebackers who could really kind of just be lined up anywhere, depending on what the play calls for. And then you've got your defensive linemen who are down in their stance. So you really got to be able to convey a message to everybody in a quick and efficient manner on the defensive side of the ball if you want this to work. So we'll see how it plays out. I think early on in the season, there's going to be bugs. There's going to be issues. And, I mean, of course, that's the way it is with everything. It's not going to go smooth on either side of the ball to start off the season. But I think by the time we hit middle of the year, especially the time we hit the end of the year and start going into bowl games and conference championships weeks, I think these communication systems in the helmet will actually be a huge benefit on both sides of the football. Some local things happening in the world of sports. Really, this is not something happening in sports as much as it's something that's happening that's going to definitely affect sports. Looks like the Pensacola Bay Center is set to undergo some renovations. It's going to take about 4 years for these renovations to happen, and it's going to be $10 million worth of renovations happening to the Bay Center, which is 40 years old, by the way. So the building is not necessarily a building that is fairly new. There's definitely a lot of things that need to be updated, that need to be changed, things that were, you know, put in place, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago that were state-of-the-art then, are dinosaur now. So definitely a lot of things that need to be upgraded and fixed there. And with this $10 million, they'll be working to do that. And of course, the Bay Center is home for a lot of different events. You know, you've got Pensacon there, the comic book convention that's held there every year, like around February-ish. You've got other great events throughout there, like concerts. You've got Disney on Ice, comedians, all these things that come through the Bay Center. You've also got the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, who comes through in March every single year for both the men's and women's basketball tournament. And really, you know, it's kind of become a great venue for basketball with that tournament rolling through. And it could have some things done to it that could make it a little bit more basketball friendly. I remember a few years ago, Pensacola, when the NBA was looking to assign G League teams, which is essentially their minor league teams, they were looking to assign them. They were going to put one here in Pensacola. They were looking hard at Pensacola, saying Pensacola could be a home of an NBA G League team. We could send some of our young players who are drafted in the NBA, we could send them to Pensacola, have them play in a league there, and develop them. Much like we see all throughout sports. But that didn't happen. And I got to feel like maybe the shape and the condition of the Bay Center, and maybe the Bay Center not being so basketball-friendly, was a big reason as to why. But with these renovations, it's going to take some time, going to take 4 years, obviously, but I think with these renovations, it could make it a little bit more basketball-friendly, which could help with the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, which, by the way, the contract for that, I believe, is up at the end of the 2025 season. So after next year's Sun Belt Conference Tournament, the Sun Belt will be looking to either renew or find a different place to go to. So maybe the promise of renewing and or rejuvenating that building will kind of help them along with renewing that contract with the city of Pensacola and Pensacola Sports. So we'll see what happens there. But, of course, obviously the Bay Center, the full-time home of your Pensacola Ice Flyers, and that'll have to be something that's considered as well, as how do we continue to keep this as an arena that is fitting of a hockey team. I mean, look, it's not hard to have, especially with hockey and basketball, it's not hard to have them in the same building. You look at Orlando, they have the Orlando Magic in the NBA, and then you have the Orlando Solar Bears in the ECHL, who they play in the same building. They share the Kia Center there in downtown Orlando, and I think that you have plenty of other teams across the country that are both NBA and NHL teams, or even lower-level hockey teams like ECHL or SPHL, that they all share the same building. And I think that this is a great opportunity, and I think it's a great thing, and I think it's something that is definitely needed for the Pensacola Bay Center. It is a building that holds a lot of great events, and it's time that we upgrade it and get it to the standard that it needs to be to continue to hold these great events. So I'm definitely looking forward to the potential of what the Pensacola Bay Center could be coming up in about 4 or 5 years from now, once these renovations are done. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Glass Half Full, an ESPN podcast with me, Jordan Glass. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Until then, you have a great day.